down towards the near corner. Cody Eakin goes in shorthanded, feeds in front, score! It's Carlson! William Carlson shorthanded. Miller right point shot, score! Tipped out in front, and it's 4-0 Vegas! Here comes Lindbergh, going to get ahead of the defense. He pulls it away, goes circle, he shoots, he scores! Oscar Lindbergh! Now a breakaway, here's David Perron, all by himself, the righty down the middle, fakes, backhand score! David Perron, 1-0 Vegas! Here's Hunt, setting up his man in front, Carrier, score! It's his first goal, William Carrier, 7-0 Vegas!
And welcome into the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show on a Thursday. That dreaded bye week has almost come to its conclusion. The boys will be back on the ice tomorrow, City National Arena at 4 o'clock, before the Edmonton Oilers come to town on Saturday. Clayton Hamilton here in the studio, along with Frank Harnish and the return of Ryan the Hockey Guy Wallace. A full line for you today. How you doing, fellas? Frank, you seem healthy and full of vigor today.
Well, you know, hopefully I'm getting a little bit stronger and healthier every day. But, yeah, you know, excited that the bye week is almost over, getting ready for hockey again on Saturday and Fan Fest Sunday, then really, really getting busy with the four-game road trip, then two home games and six-game road trip. A lot of hockey after tomorrow for the next 2.5-3 months, and actually longer than that for the Vegas Golden Knights, because we are playoff bound, and yes, I said we.
Yes, right. The next 41 games, Ryan, compressed into a short amount of time.
Yeah, it makes a whole bunch of sense to spread all the games out in the first 3.5 months of the season and then have a five-day bye week in the middle of it, and then to play 41 games in 2.5 months. That makes absolute perfect sense. It's fantastic.
Union did a great job on that.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's good.
That's good. Well, we're going to jump into some things that the league has done. We've got the Super 16 coming up later, All-Star reaction. We do have tickets to give away to the Edmonton Oiler game on Saturday. Got Fan Fest, of course, on Sunday. But right now we're going to go out to the home office of the NHL Network and welcome in our new buddy, Brian Lawton. You can catch him on NHL tonight at 3 p.m. Pacific. Plus, NHL Network's going to feature the Hurricanes at the Capitals tonight at 4 o'clock Pacific. Visit NHLNetwork.com for your local channel listings. Welcome in, Brian.
How you doing, guys?
We're doing great, man. It's great to have you as part of the show.
Absolutely my pleasure. I can't part of the fans there come to a game in Vegas.
Yeah, it's been a pretty good run for the boys here at the first half of the season.
Absolutely. It's been the best story of the year, in my opinion.
Well, and yeah, and you know, people say the best story of the year, and then a lot of them throw in like the thing of, well, the best hockey story of the year. I could argue that it's the best story of the year, period, in sports. What this town has done, the way that the community has wrapped themselves around the team, the way that the team has ingrained themselves into the community. I mean, this is just an unbelievable scenario. And then you throw the level of play on the ice, and it's just blowing everybody away. And you have a community that didn't have a hockey team before, and now people are complaining about the guys not in the All-Star game, for crying out loud. So what a difference a year makes.
No, it's great to have a little controversy. They didn't get enough good players in. How did LA get three and they're ahead of the standings? Well, maybe they have a little more history in the league and their players do. Who knows? But, yeah, I was happy to see Vegas get two players. They absolutely could have had three very easily, in my opinion.
So one of the storylines surrounding the Vegas Golden Knights surrounded the expansion rules and whether or not it was too easy on the Golden Knights to assemble a team that was not only competitive, but that could be this good early on. Do you buy into that at all? Or do you think that George McPhee just was able to assemble a team like no other GM would have been able to?
That's a bunch of hogwash. George McPhee did an amazing job in assembling this team. George McPhee did so well that even he will tell you, I didn't think that we would do this well. He just, every decision he made was spot on. His leadership was tremendous. They've had some luck, which you have to have the kind that Vegas is having, but we may have more expansion in the future. And I got to tell you guys, I think that team will be hard-pressed to do half as well as Vegas has done. And they'll have the same rules, in my opinion. We don't know that for a fact, but I would suggest strongly that they will. And I'd be shocked if they did half as good as Vegas is. They've done that well. They've absolutely blown it out of the water.
In talking about all of having a lot of luck or having a lot of these picks hit, what do you think goes into that? Do you think it's just the natural progression of a younger player getting better in the offseason? Is it just the opportunity of getting more ice time, of playing with guys that have been third and fourth line players and they just know where to be on the right side of the puck all the time? What do you think the factor is that really took this team over the edge?
Well, three things in my opinion. First off, an incredible job by the management selecting the players they selected. Second off, incredible job by Gallant bringing this group of players together and molding them into a unit so quickly. And third off, you have to tip players for grabbing the bull by the horns and absolutely making the most of their opportunities. There's so many guys that get chances every year long, and I have never seen a team give so much opportunity to a group of players, but I've never seen a group of players take more advantage of it than these guys have. Carlson, I coached Eric Halla in the summer in Minnesota. I chatted with him one day. After a game he had played, I looked at him. I said, I can't believe you don't score 25 goals in this league. And he was like, I haven't really had an opportunity to play in that role. He was in Vegas, and he's blowing the lights out. So it's a combination of those three things. Management excellent, coach is fantastic, and players just taking advantage of it. And boy, is that a good player when you're A, a manager, or B, a player. Two things that I've done in my life. So I think I understand how it feels.
What do you say to the people out there that say, wow, I'm glad I'm not in George McPhee's shoes right now, because what a tough decision he makes with the trade deadline and everything else? I feel kind of the opposite about it. I think there's a bunch of GMs right now that wish they were in that situation, because he has so many different options. Build for the future, win now. Yeah, there are some difficult decisions to be made, but right now he's the GM of an expansion team that's in first place that looks like a shoo-in for the playoffs. I don't feel that bad for George McPhee. I mean, they kind of hired him for tough decisions, and I think he's relishing this in a lot of ways.
Oh, absolutely. George is very modest, but even he'll tell you he's very thankful for the success they've had, the people have put forth. And I talk to George pretty regularly. He's thrilled. He's thrilled with how the players have embraced the city, how the city has embraced the players, how the ownership has given him the freedom to manage, to make the decisions that he needs to make. And I only say that because this will be a big time in the long-term future of the Vegas Golden Knights. What happens in the next 60 days will be very instrumental as to where this team goes. Everything's been tremendous to this point forward, but George, a veteran in this league, knows as well as anybody that you're kind of only as good as your last game. He's got to continue to make great decisions, and I don't see any reason why he won't. He's got the experience, he's got a great staff, and he is in that very enviable position that you point out, something that I think he'll be able to exploit again.
In talking about that, looking ahead to the trade deadline, this team seems to thrive just based on the fact that they were all taken together at the same time, they all came in at the same time, and they all bonded together at the same time. Do you think of this team, or look at this team and the makeup of them, and say, they're doing so well now, if we bring in a piece, if we're going for it, if we're trying to make the playoffs and make a push, should we just stay pat and not touch anything? Because maybe bringing a piece in will disrupt what's already going on in the locker room.
That's one of those big decisions that I was referencing. It is, in theory, possible. It's possible with any club to bring in a guy like the Washington Capitals last year, brought in Kevin Shattenkirk, a guy that should make them better. And it never really gelled. Their team certainly didn't play any better than they did in the regular season. And they had another early exit. George is faced with those same difficult decisions. I played for the San Jose Sharks in their expansion season, and I understand how it is to be not in the position these guys are in, because we weren't very good, but to want to get some help, to want to be improved. When I talk to players out of Vegas now, I don't get that same feeling that we had. These guys feel really good about their group. I'm not expecting a lot of big moves from Vegas. But what is different for me is I'm not expecting them to maybe move the players out that if you had asked me in the summer, I would have said, oh, James Neal for sure. He won't be there. Jonathan Marshall should never be re-signed. You know, he'll have a nice season, and then before the trade deadline, at the trade deadline, he'll get moved. They'll pick up another asset, continue on with their long-term plan. All that is in flux now because of how well the players played.
Brian Lawton from NHL Tonight on the NHL Network joining us here, Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, Fox Sports Radio, your home for the Golden Knights in Las Vegas. All right, I'm going to ask you for a second to put on your GM hat and take George McPhee's role. What do you do as far as walking that fine line between building for the future and trying to get more draft picks like we know he likes to do and players that you keep, not just for this year, but maybe for the long term? We've seen McNabb and Marchessault get those extensions of their contract. There's a lot of other names out there. Certainly, I would love to see the Carlson-Smith-Marchessault line together for the next 10 years or so the way that they're playing right now. But how do you walk that fine line, and what do you think the right answers for that is?
For me, I will tell you that knowing George the way I do, he would have had a very detailed plan as to how they were going to achieve success. But I also know, having sat in that chair, that it's a fluid equation. And I think it is literally being rewritten right in front of our eyes because of the play. Coming in, for sure, it would have been to pick up guys that you think will make you competitive. You want to show well in the city. But the long-term goal is that we got to win the Stanley Cup, not this year or next year or even the year after that, but certainly we want to be on that path by the fourth or fifth season. That's just been completely thrown out the window. And again, that's because of the players, because of the coaches, because of the management, because of the ownership, quite frankly, as well. I think George is going to have some real serious meetings with his staff, and they're going to take a real deep dive into where they're at, what their chances are of not making the playoffs, but winning the Stanley Cup, and then making decisions from there. Because from day one, Bill Foley has always been adamant that his goal wasn't necessarily just to own a hockey team. His goal was to own a team that wins the Stanley Cup. And he strikes me as one of these guys, having known as many owners as I know in this league, that has that burning desire and passion to just want to win a championship. And George is going to have to guide him through this time. And maybe he'll have to tell him it's not our time yet. And we'll figure that out as we see the moves that are made. You guys will figure that out. Everybody will. I think they're going to continue the course that they're on, and they're not going to move as many players as I would have thought. That's just my guess.
In looking at this team, obviously, we've seen in the past where when teams win the Stanley Cup, you try to model your organization after that blueprint. And we've seen this happen with the Golden Knights, where it's kind of the antithesis of waiting for a generational player to turn your franchise around. It's just assembling a bunch of guys you think have the right work ethic, can skate the way that Gerard Gallant wants them to skate, and it's worked out in the absence of a true star. Do you see other teams maybe looking at this, maybe the Edmonton Oilers, for example, and saying, this is what an assembly of parts can do as opposed to just one or two generational talents?
I think other people are certainly taking notice. It's hard not to notice when you watch Vegas, the commitment of every player on the ice. It's really impressive, and it's really a treat to watch. Here at NHL Network, obviously, we're breaking down games every night. And every time I do a Vegas game, I just marvel at the work ethic. And believe me, guys, every single player in this league, every coach, every team is preaching work ethic. That's not a novel idea. These guys are just executing it on ways that I've never seen before in this league, quite frankly. It's every player to a man doing their job. It's very Bill Belichick-like, in my opinion.
Brian Lawton joining us from NHL Tonight, NHL Network. And Brian, we appreciate you talking about the Golden Knights, but we'd like to shift gears just a little bit and talk about you, because there was something interesting that I saw about you in your past as a player, and I'd like to hearken back to 1983, if we could, when you were part of Team USA and the World Juniors that had to go to Leningrad in the Soviet Union to play. And I want to know, what was that like as a 17-year-old kid going to the Iron Curtain and playing hockey?
you know what? It's almost indescribable. Of course, Leningrad, now Leningrad, now St. Petersburg, which I always joke when I tell people that ask me, did you ever play that World Junior Tournament? Yeah, I played in a city that's no more. Not named the same name. It was a long time ago. But in any event, I was playing high school hockey at the time, was added very late to that team, went over there to play for the team. I was the last forward on the team. The coach didn't know my name, and yet I ended up having just a fantastic experience. The country was in rough shape. The accommodations were abysmal. Every single player on our team lost no less than 12 pounds in about a 2.5 week span, but somehow we played well as a group, and it's one of those experiences that's literally a scrapbook moment till this day. I played for the United States in a couple Canada Cups, multiple World Championships and a World Junior, and those are things you really look back on and cherish, and you feel fortunate to have had the opportunity to play in them.
When you do look back, are there any moments that you regret? Like, I know one thing, you had a very tough decision when you were the number one draft pick by the Minnesota North Stars, and you opted to turn pro and not go to the Olympics. Is that an experience that, in hindsight, you wish that maybe you would have partaken of, or did you do the right thing for young Brian Lawton at that time in his life?
I came from a very, I wouldn't say poor, but certainly not rich family. Wasn't a lot of information back then. I made the decision to turn pro, so it's totally on me. I would absolutely not do that if I could go back in time. Everybody has something they wish they could change. For me, I would absolutely change that. It wasn't necessary. I finished my first year in the National Hockey League at about 168 pounds. That's okay in today's game, but it wasn't necessarily that way back then. It was a much more physical league. I played 25 games the year before I went to the National Hockey League. That's just not conducive for the rigors that you face. So in hindsight, I clearly wish I was on the 1984 U.S. Olympic team. I was named to that club. I turned pro right before the season. I wish I had played in that Olympics. And this shocks people because I say this sometimes. And I also wish I had gone on and played 1 or 2 years of collegiate hockey after that. But I was a little bit in a rush. I didn't know better. It was my mistake, and that's definitely something that I would change.
And as a 17-year-old on that 1983 team, in that tournament were guys like Dave Anderchuk, Mario Lemieux, Steve Yzerman, Dominic Hasek. At the time, did you realize the futures that those guys were going to have? Were they clearly the best guys on the ice at the time, or were there other people that stood out to you?
Dave Anderchuk and Paul Steer and Paul Pelletier all played on Team Canada. I was playing in high school at that time, and those guys had all played or started in the National Hockey League that year. So they played the first half in the NHL, and I just remember showing up thinking, I think I just saw these guys on the Buffalo Sabres, the New York Islanders. What are they doing here? So I knew who they were. It was evident they were great players. Stevie and Mario and Sylvain Turgeron, for that matter, were essentially the fourth line for Canada because younger players typically didn't play. Somehow I got a chance to play a little bit more. But it was obvious to me that those guys would be amazing. They were the fourth line. Canada, one game, I think all those guys had about 5 points. They just didn't get a chance to play very much. But there were other great players in that tournament. Thomas Sandstrom, don't necessarily remember Dominic that much as being that dominating. I had Tony Granato on my team. Tom Barrasso was also on my team. So there was a lot of great guys. In hindsight, no, you don't really know it to that level. So many things happened from then. But it was clear to me that Mario and Steve were exceptional.
Back there, going from a junior team and then jumping right into the NHL, what was that experience like for you? Because back then, let's face it, it was a lot tougher game. You played with guys like Willie Plett and a bunch of tough guys in a league that was a lot tougher. You mentioned that you weren't the biggest guy in the world, but were you constantly with your head on a swivel out there? Because back then, you didn't know exactly what somebody might try to do to you.
Yeah, you know, one of the biggest regrets for me in my career is I wish I'd played in it. I think the NHL is such a great game now. It was significantly different back then. I was incredibly aware. You know, there were things that went on in hockey games back then on a normal nightly basis that you'd get thrown in jail for now. And that's just the way it was. And it was accepted. And you might do some of these things, and you might get suspended for a game or two, but you probably just got a five-minute penalty. And as a young person growing up in the U.S. playing hockey, I thought it was crazy. I really did. I played 4 years before I even knew what was going on in the National Hockey League. But I thought it was bizarre. And I'm really happy and pleased for today's players that come out, show their skills, their ability. And you don't have to be so bogged down with the rigor of what was going on back then. The game is so much better today. It's so much faster. And, you know, all the mumbo-jumbo about you have to have fighting, particularly in a place like Vegas or a Southern Bowl, because people won't enjoy hockey. It's a bunch of baloney. The game's never been more popular than it is now, and I credit the players that have been involved. I credit the management at the National Hockey League for steering it in that direction and recognizing that.
Yeah, the game wasn't exactly slapshot back then, but it might not have been as far removed as some people today think it way it was back then. But
exactly.
When you come to the skill set, you talk about the young players and a lot of smaller players today having so much success. What are your thoughts about the 3-on-3 in the overtime and that during the regular season? Because I know some people really like it. Some hockey purists don't like it at all. They don't like the shootout, this and that. What do you think about those rules? Because personally, when I see a game go to overtime, I don't care what the two teams on are. I am glued to the set on the edge of my seat because I love 3-on-3 overtime because of that skill set that's involved and the back-and-forth action.
Yeah, if you're a fan of athleticism, then I don't know how you couldn't love 3-on-3. I happen to really like it. That was a little bit more my style, so maybe I'm biased, but I think it's fantastic. I like the shootout as well. You got to bring these things to a conclusion. I don't like the tied. To me, those aren't great solutions for games. So I'm pretty pleased with where it's at. I also like that we don't use the 3-on-3 in the playoffs. So for the regular season, I think it's perfect. I think we've got it right. And it's exciting, clearly.
Well, Brian, we appreciate you joining with us. You're coming up NHL tonight up at 3 o'clock Pacific. What can we expect on the show today?
You know, it's a little bit of a lighter week, obviously, because teams are starting their bye weeks or on their bye weeks. So for me, this week has been really enjoyable because we're getting a chance to just jump into so many more games and do more detail on each one. Last night, just 2 games on the docket. Tonight, just 3. But for us here, personally, we love it. Gives us a chance to, we're really diving into the Hurricanes tonight. And their group of young players and how well they're doing, as well as featuring the Washington Capitals, Tampa, Calgary, you name it, everybody gets a little bit more coverage. And as analysts here at the network, we love that. You know, Columbus is playing Buffalo as well tonight. Gives us a chance to look at maybe why Buffalo hasn't had the season that they wish they'd had, and also why Columbus hasn't scored as much as we probably thought they would have. Really exciting time that keeps you on your toes here.
Well, I know I love NHL tonight, and I love the bonus coverage that you guys show on all the games and everything. I do have to sneak in one other quick question if you got a second, because I know you've been hitting this on Twitter and different things, and it's a hot topic right now. I like the rule changes, and I like the fact that the NHL is not afraid to change things around sometimes. But it seems like the big ticket item right now is the offsides rule and what they're going to do with that. I know Edmonton's not happy with it. A lot of teams have been not happy with it for different points of the season. What do you think about that, and what do you think change, if any, they should make or need to make?
I love the offside challenge. I think it's a necessity in the game. I don't like the fact that if your skate is a millimeter off the ice, you're no longer onside. So I would try to do something as technology improves to make it more about the plane of the blue line. And I would even succumb to limiting that to a player's skates or feet or whatever. If your skates or feet are equal to the blue line, then you're onside, in my opinion. It was a tough call for the Edmonton Oilers the other night. There's a lot of teams that have had tough calls because a skate was in the air when maybe you'd say, geez, that's clearly onside, but the skate is in the air. I just like to see that change. I think we've got the technology to address it. I think when Connor McDavid speaks, everybody should definitely listen for the quality of player that he is. But I don't think that everybody has to agree with necessarily our star players if they say something. Connor was pretty clear that he thinks they should take it out. I don't agree with him on that. I think we want to get it right whenever we can, as quickly as we can. But I do think we need to continue to tweak the rule to get it to its best possible spot.
All right, Brian, thank you for that. And we look forward to catching you tonight, not just on NHL Tonight, but also Capitals and the Hurricanes at 4 o'clock Pacific. Like you said, visit NHLnetwork.com for your local channel listings, and we hope to have you back on in the future.
I want to stop in when I'm in. I'm inviting myself right now, so lock the doors. I'm going to stop by.
All right, you're welcome anytime. Brian Lawton, NHL Tonight. When we come back, we're going to talk about the All-Star Game, the Super 16, and we've got some tickets to give away to that Edmonton game, so stick with us right here on the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM, your home for Golden Knights hockey in the Valley. And welcome back to the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show. Clayton Hamilton, Frank Harnish, Ryan the Hockey Guy, Wallace, lots to get to. A little bit of news came out late yesterday from the Vegas Golden Knights. That is Lucas Spezza is back to injured reserve, has a ruptured ligament on the middle finger of his left hand and had surgery to repair it, expected to be out 6 to 8 weeks.
It's a hefty punch.
Yeah, it's obviously it's not good. Luckily, they do have a lot of depth at the defenseman position, but Spezza was a guy who's really opened up a lot of eyes, was having, I thought, a pretty good season. You hate to see anybody get injured and lose time to it, but injuries are part of the game. But hopefully it won't be quite that long. But you also, it is nice to have the luxury where you don't have to try to rush somebody back in.
Buffalo Sabre defenseman Zach Bogosian will be out 4 to 6 weeks with a lower body injury. He sustained that at practice on Wednesday. He got tied up with Evander Kane in the corner and needed help leaving the ice, unable to put any weight on his leg.
That's why you don't want Evander Kane on your team, I guess. I don't know. It's from bad to worse for the Buffalo Sabres. It's really tough.
Yeah, out 4 to 6 weeks, I believe. So,
Be careful at practice.
I don't know that it makes Buffalo that much worse. How much worse can they get?
Right. There was a trade yesterday between the Chicago Blackhawks and the Arizona Coyotes. Anthony Duclair was traded by to the Blackhawks from the Arizona Coyotes. Chicago's also going to get defenseman Adam Clendenning. Arizona receiving Richard Panik and Laurent Dauphin.
I like it for the Blackhawks. I think Anthony Duclair is a really, really good young player. It's going to be interesting to see how he ingratiates himself to Coach Quenneville and, you know, his penchant for having guys do exactly what he wants at every single moment of the game. And if you mess up for a half a second, you're in his doghouse and you're never, ever going to play again. But it'll be interesting because I think Duclair is a really good piece for the Chicago Blackhawks. It gives them more scoring depth.
Yeah, and I don't know that you never, ever play again. Yeah, you might be in there for half a season or so, but he does have a pretty deep doghouse. But make no mistake about it, the Chicago Blackhawks, although they're not giving up on making the playoffs or anything this year because they still think they have some talent, they are trying to get a lot of younger players and try to rebuild that team in certain ways. This is a team that's hit hard by the salary cap year after year. I don't like for Blackhawk fans that Panik goes because I think he's a good, solid player, but I understand what they're trying to do, and they've still kind of handcuffed themselves with those contracts they signed to Kane and Taze years ago. So if you're the Blackhawks, you got to make some kind of moves because you have to get younger and you have to try to get better down the road.
Blackhawks general manager Stan Bowman said that he had tried to acquire Duclair about a year ago, but they couldn't agree on a trade. He said he's the sort of player that embodies what the NHL is all about now in terms of speed and his ability to put the puck in the net.
Yeah, I think they were talking about trying to trade for Duclair when they sent Nicholas Hjalmarsson to Arizona in the offseason, but didn't work out then. It works out now. It'll be interesting to see how Duclair does in Chicago.
All-star rosters were announced yesterday, and kudos to Las Vegas and to the fan base that went nuts about William Karlsson not being on the all-star team. Good on you, Las Vegas, for caring so much. Very good indeed. Marc-Andre Fleury is headed to the All-Star game, as is James Neal. As you looked at all four divisions, guys, what were your thoughts on the All-Star selections?
So I've got a few. First and foremost, it'll be really fun to see Nikita Kucherov, Steven Stamkos, Victor Hedman, and Andre Vasilevsky on the ice at the same time to start the All-Star game in Tampa. That'll be a really cool moment. The second thing that I thought about was Brent Burns. Really? Minus 19? You're a defenseman? But then I started thinking about the format, and if we're talking about 3-on-3, it's better to have a crappy defenseman on the ice than a good defenseman on the ice. So that makes sense. You're not going to get anything better from San Jose because they're an awful team. So why not take the worst part of the game, and that's defense, and take it, just throw it all out, just throw it out completely. Put Brent Burns in there, minus 19. It should lead to some fireworks.
One of the things that I looked at when I saw this roster is the same thing I do every year, is I'm not a big fan of every team has to have an all-star, because not every team does have an all-star. But if you're going to do that, then I would like to see them expand it by four players. Put two more forwards, two more defensemen, or even just three players. Two more forwards, one more defenseman, whatever, to make another pairing out there. So you can get guys like Carlson, like Riley Smith or Marcia Scholl, either one. I mean, the Golden Knights, all the credit in the world to Neal and Marc-Andre Fleury making it. But the best line on the team and one of the best lines in the entire NHL this year consists of three guys that aren't on this roster.
See, and what's funny about that is you've got a team like Anaheim who has Rickard Rakell there. Rickard Rakell does not need to be in this All-Star game. John Gibson should be the guy from Anaheim. John Gibson is the only reason they've gotten to where they are in the standings, that they're even close with all the injuries that they've had of even getting themselves back into playoff position. John Gibson is the all-star for the Anaheim Ducks, not Rickard Rakell. So what I would argue, and this is probably not going to be very popular here in Vegas, is that Marc-Andre Fleury hasn't played enough to merit an all-star game appearance for the Golden Knights, at least not more so than William Karlsson or Jonathan Marchessault. I'd rather see Fleury's spot go to, you know, John Gibson, a goalie that probably deserves it maybe a little bit more than Marc-Andre Fleury. And then with that Rickard Rakell spot, you can put in Karlsson or Marchessault. And then at that point, you have to ask yourself, why is James Neal on this All-Star team when he doesn't lead the Golden Knights in goals? He doesn't lead them in points. That's Karlsson and Marchessault respectively. So there's some things I would change from the Golden Knights side, and it would be a little bit of a snub to Marc-Andre Fleury. But again, I don't think he's played enough to merit that over the other guys that have been there the whole time and just as equally important.
I will tell you one thing that I do think they got right, and I like this for a youngster who deserves all the props he's getting from Vancouver. I do believe that Brock Besser should be their one representative. I think he's clearly going to be the rookie of the year right now if he continues playing like he has been. So I kind of like that. But I don't like some of the other picks here and there. And I understand some of it's name recognition, this, that, or the other. But you got to quit taking people just because everybody knows their name. It should be who's worthy of being there.
And sometimes, just as Ryan articulated, you paint yourself into a corner when you have to have a representative from each team. And I, like you, Frank, would like to see them expand the roster. Give us two more forwards and one more defenseman. Major League Baseball ran into the same problem with their All-Star format when they had to have a guy from every team, and it had expanded so much that there were so many teams that there weren't really a lot of spaces, and they expanded what is normally a 25-game man-game roster to 36, especially for the All-Star game. So I don't know how you'd be hurt by adding three more players. I don't think you'd be having guys that didn't deserve to be in the All-Star game by adding three more per division. And also with all of the emphasis on player safety, cutting down a little bit of their ice time by having you be able to run four lines of three out instead of three, I don't think you'd get much pushback.
No, I don't think you would. It's probably never going to change because it's the NHL and they don't actually make changes. I understand we're talking about 3-on-3 in the All-Star game, but it's a change that was mandated because fans really, really wanted it. I don't think fans are crying too much about the fact that every team has to have a representative, because at least then you've got a dog in the fight. Mm-hmm. You know, it would be the worst thing in the world to be a Florida Panther fan and not have somebody to root for in the All-Star game.
Especially when it's on in Tampa, which isn't that far away.
No, right. Exactly. But, like, look at the Kings. You know, when the All-Star game was there in Los Angeles, you had Andre Kopitar, you had Jeff Carter, you had Drew Doughty, and you had Jonathan Quick. Jonathan Quick gets hurt. Andre Kopitar is awful. And the only representative in Los Angeles was Jeff Carter. That's it. Mm-hmm. That's it. And that deflated the entire event for Los Angeles and their fans because they couldn't go there and they didn't get what Tampa's going to get with Kucherov and Stamkos and Hedman and Vasilevsky. They're not going to get that moment where all of their guys are on the ice like what happened with Chicago in Chicago. That's the moment right there. And it sucks when you don't get that, but it's also really unfair at times when you have the home team or the host city, and you've got guys that are in there that are undeserving. Like, you know, I mean, Nikita Kucherov, Steven Stamkos, Victor Hedman, that all makes sense. But what if those guys were having bad years?
Right.
What do you do then? You know, what do you do then? So
yeah, what if the game was in Arizona?
Or Buffalo. But to your point about Brock Besser, and I just wanted to talk about this because it's really funny. What else? Like, what else would you even try to drag up from Vancouver that isn't Brock Besser?
Exactly.
Like, nothing. Literally nothing. That's the only logical pick, and it's the only one that makes sense, and I'm glad that it's there. But by the same token, why in the heck is Sidney Crosby at this game? Statistically, this is one of his worst seasons as a professional hockey player. Why is he there? And no Malkin. But Letang is there. But because Letang has to fit into that spot, why not? Why not just have Evgeny Malkin there and say, screw it, go play defense?
Mm-hmm. By the way, I want to throw in one other thing when you were talking about the L.A. thing.
Yeah.
Not only did the fans not get to see all those players on the ice, but every time they saw any billboard, it was Kopitar on the billboard.
Right, no,
who was not in the game.
He did all the promotion, everything, and he was just awful last year. And it sucks. But again, like Connor McDavid's at this All-Star game. His team is in shambles. They were supposed to be Stanley Cup favorites. He's played well. He's got the points, but he's got less goals this year than Dustin Brown.
Right. Let's look at some other guys that aren't there. Vladimir Tarasenko,
mm-hmm.
not there.
Yep.
Patrice Bergeron, not there.
And you know, I'll say Patrice Bergeron should be there just because I hate Brad Marchand.
How about Voracek, Anders Lee? A couple of guys. Like I said, I feel like if you had three more guys, mm-hmm. do you think that those three guys that would be added in each division, you would say, oh my God, this is a travesty. How did that guy get there? I don't think so. I think you probably have enough good players that three more aren't going to kill you.
Well, I think we'd see less of these. Why in the heck is Rickard Rakell here?
Right.
We would see less of that.
Right.
With more guys, we would see less. Why is this guy here?
Mm-hmm. Well, and the thing is, if we didn't see less of it, it would still be because every team has to have a representative, but then at least we'd see other guys that weren't so much getting snubbed.
Right.
And I think that's the main key here, is that the guys that deserve it don't all make it now because of this. I have no problem either. If every team has somebody on there, that's fine. But then make it enough. And again, it's a 3-on-3 format. You can throw the lines out there, give them shorter shifts, whatever. Mm-hmm. Like you said, the player safety and everything that they're constantly talking about. Let the guys go out there, have some fun, and do that. But give other guys more an opportunity. Because William Karlsson not being on this All-Star team is a semi-travesty.
Yeah.
But it's like what you were talking about with Tarasenko. Is Eric Staal a better and having a better season than Vladimir Tarasenko? Mm-hmm. Absolutely not.
Right.
No, but Minnesota's got to have somebody.
Well, yeah, exactly, mm-hmm. and it's, you know, Matt Dumba, he's messed everything up for everybody, but then again, you look at, you know, Matt Dumba, is he going to take John Klingberg's space? No. Is he going to take P.K. Subban's place? No one can do that, we all know, so, and he's not taking Alex Pietrangelo's place, so open it up for a couple more guys. I like that idea. Mm-hmm. It's the NHL, and let's be honest, the players don't care.
Right.
They really honestly do not care about this game. Because so many players, year after year, oh man, you know, it's a great honor. I'm really, really proud of the honor that you've given me, Gary Bettman, to have a break and have to work anyway in a game that doesn't matter, in the middle of a season that does matter. But my shoulder, it's hurting, so I'm gonna sit this one out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, you have to miss a game on the front end or the back end of the All-Star game, or you will be suspended. Like, when you have to implement a rule to suspend a player for opting out of the All-Star game, that should tell you everything you need to know about what the players actually think about this All-Star game.
I've often thought that as a goalie, I might not want to make this team because you might be shell-shocked by the end of it because of the 3-on-3 format that you're facing out there. Although, there's been a couple All-Star games where the goaltending's been really good and there haven't been that many goals scored.
And really quick, Elliot Friedman talked about this in, I want to say, a week or two back in his 31 Thoughts piece, in which he said there may be a semi-boycott of the All-Star game by some players because of the decision not to go to the Olympics. Pay close attention to what players respectfully decline this, but it's not going to matter if they don't come out and say, we're not going to the All-Star game because you didn't let us go to the Olympics.
All right, and we will see how the politics work themselves out according to the All-Star game and the Olympics as the rest of this season progresses and the next Olympic cycle happens. One thing that we do know that's going to happen is that your Vegas Golden Knights are going to return to action on Saturday, 6:30 for the pregame show for us, 7 o'clock for puck drop, and we have got some tickets to give away. We are going to give those away right now, 702-876-1340, in honor of All-Star James Neal, number 18, caller number 18, 702-876-1340. You are going to go and see Connor McDavid come to town and play your Vegas Golden Knights on Saturday night. Stick with us. We got some things to look at in Rockford, Illinois. They're on the old docket when we come back. They're in the pink. They absolutely are. We're going to tell you why at the end on the other side of the break. 702-876-1340. You're going to go see the Edmonton Oilers, Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, Fox Sports Radio, your home for Knights hockey in the Valley. And welcome back to the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show. Hey, guys, the old break is almost over. Boys are going to be back at the rink tomorrow, City National, 4 o'clock for practice, and then a game against Connor McDavid and the Edmonton Oilers on Saturday. But Frank, you were telling me that a couple of things that you love are all combining in one spot, and that would be hockey, baseball, and the great state of Illinois.
Yeah, well, I don't know that it's all things that I love here, but if you are heading to Rockford, and I don't know why you would be, but if you're going to be up around that area January 26th as they take on Ontario, that would be the Rockford Ice Hogs, of course. They will have the Pink in the Rink night. They started this back in 2010. Their Twitter feed has said the Ice Hogs will don Rockford Peaches-inspired threads made famous in a league of their own on January 26th. As part of Pink in the Rink Night, jerseys will be available via auction and raffle with proceeds benefiting breast cancer research. So that's a cool thing. They have raised more than $180,000 for breast cancer since their first Pink in the Rink. And not only are they wearing these hideous jerseys, and yes, these are not sweaters. These are donned after the baseball league of their own jerseys. They're also going to be dyeing the ice pink for that particular game.
Nice. Well, they wouldn't even really be jerseys if they were after the Rockford Peaches. They would be mini dresses because they played in mini dresses.
Well, they're actually not dresses here, so I guess they didn't go. Yeah.
Movie.
Yeah. Well, they're not going quite that far on them, but the jersey part they are doing. So there is nothing. There's no indication whether or not there is crying aloud in this game.
So Gina Davis, Lori Petty, Rosie O'Donnell, Madonna. Which was the least believable baseball player in that movie?
I have no idea.
No idea.
I mean, Rosie O'Donnell certainly doesn't seem very athletic.
Yeah.
But she does seem maybe. No, I'm not even going to say it and get myself in trouble.
That's the worst question you've ever asked.
I actually have an answer for that, but I'm not going to get myself in trouble and get called into Tony's office. No,
that's good.
I'm not.
Well, Madonna did all her own baseball playing in that movie.
They all look like they could play baseball.
Nice. Gina Davis as well. She did all of her own catching, all of her own stunt, all of her own baseball work.
Madonna was.
Would you have made that team, Clayton Hamilton?
Yes,
you would.
Yep, for sure. Absolutely, I would have made that team.
Would you have gone and watched them play?
Would you? Would you have cried in baseball?
No, there's no crying. There's no crying in baseball.
Yeah, but there was.
Okay. Yeah. You know what? There's no crying. There's no crying in the T.C. Martin show.
Yeah, there is every day.
And the doctor is next.